Hello, Mzanzi. You're listening to Farmers Inside Track, proudly brought to you by Food for Mzanzi. Officially, this is the world's best podcast for 2024, as awarded by WANEFRA, the global organization for the world's press. I am your host, Patricia Tembo. Welcome to episode 481. Today, we're discussing control methods for the pest Tuta absoluta affecting tomato farmers. This episode is set to be informative and practical as we welcome Blessing Mpahlele, an entomology PhD candidate at the University of Pretoria.
Hello, Blessing Mpahlele. Welcome to Farmers Inside Track. We're so delighted to have you. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Patricia. Thank you for having me.
You are a researcher at the Agricultural Research Council, but I am also aware that you're a PhD student. Completely, you know, you're currently working on that, and assuming that's what has brought you to the research that you're doing as well, that we're going to dive into later on the episode. But maybe if you could just give a brief introduction of your scope of work, that'll be great.
So then, just to make corrections to the introduction, that I was hosted by the ARC as a PhD student causing their PDB program. So now I'm no longer there. I'm finishing up, of course, my studies in the ARC, but then I'm actually a full-time student at the University of Pretoria doing my PhD there. So my research project actually entails developing an integrated management strategy for Tuta absoluta, formerly known as Tuta absoluta. So since the decision-making process to spray insecticides, biological control are the cornerstone of integrated pest management, in this research, we optimize the insecticide applications and determine the potential of biological control to effectively manage these economic pests. So this is what I've been doing for the past couple of years, of course, as I started my project in late 2020.
Maybe just to reiterate to the listeners, the field that you're currently in, you're a postgraduate student, but your focus is on integrated pest management, and that's in entomology. Am I correct?
Yes, you're correct.
Great to know that we're speaking to someone who is definitely clued up integrated pest management. We've spoken about this topic in several episodes before for our listeners, if you are interested in learning a bit more about integrated pest management. Blessing is just going to speak to us and let us know more about the pest. Tuta absoluta, explain the research that you've been doing and how the work you've been doing in tackling the challenge farmers have with this pest.
Tuta absoluta is actually an economic insect pest of tomatoes, which arrived in South Africa in 2016. It actually originates from South America and then invaded Africa in 2008. And then from 2008 until 2016, in South Africa, of course, internal South Africa in late 2016. What Tuta absoluta does is that it mostly feeds on tomatoes. Tomatoes, of course, is a primary host plant. However, it can also feed on other agricultural crops, particularly those belonging to Solanaceae crops. Those, of course, going to include your eggplant, your pepper, as well as eggplant, pepper, as well as and potatoes, of course. So in the absence of these crops, what it does is that it can still survive in wild host plant species that will include your nightshade and other grasses that you can find out there. So what's happened is that since it invaded South Africa in 2016, farmers have been struggling with its management. So what they've been doing is they apply insecticides throughout to manage its infestations, which of course often realize that it has actually been difficult to manage its pest populations using insecticides alone.
You know, I'm gathering that the Tuta absoluta is an alien sort of species. It's not a pest that's been around for a long time.
It's been around for quite some time because before its invasion from its native region, it took about at least I think about 60 years before it started to invade other neighboring continents. That was actually in 2006 when its first invasion was recorded to Spain. And then from Spain, of course, it took about 2 years for it to start spreading to other areas around the world.
And in South Africa, which regions do farmers see this pest? Where is it a major problem in South Africa?
You mostly found it in tomato producing areas. That is going to be Limpopo, Gauteng, Mpumalanga, all those tomato producing areas. Because initially it was reported in Mpumalanga and I think in other parts of Gauteng, that was in 2016. But since then, it has actually spread throughout the country. So you can still find it in many parts of the country at the moment.
Can you explain a bit further why this pest is particularly a concern for tomato farmers?
As I mentioned before, that it is actually difficult to manage because at instances whereby there's no proper management of it, it can actually cause up to 100% of beard loss. That's why we are not managing it. So you can imagine what farmers are faced with out there. And of course, if I had to translate, it requires actually a very serious attention by researchers as well as farmers working together, because if there are no effective management tactics or strategies in place, farmers are faced with a very, you can see, very dangerous insect pest of their tomato crops.
Earlier, you mentioned how, you know, the use of insecticide is not as effective, or it's not always the most effective way to tackle this pest. Earlier, you mentioned that farmers using insecticides is not the best measure to take. Can you maybe explain insecticide resistance and the importance of, you know, farmers to pay attention to that as well?
So not to say that, because we need to be careful about this so that we do not mislead farmers out there. Not to say that insecticides are not effective, but what we understand so far is that Dutasulfa has got a potential to develop insecticide resistance. So when it has got a potential to develop insecticide resistance, we see a need to start teaching our farmers that to be careful in terms of spraying insecticides. Because like in IPM, I don't know if we do have an understanding of IPM works, but then IPM suggests that insecticide application should be adopted later in the control, meaning that it's giving opportunity to other control measures to be implemented. And if those control measures are not effective, therefore you can start spraying insecticides. So what we understand at the moment is that farmers are using chemical control or insecticide application as a primary control method, which of course we need to discourage, because insecticide application as it stands, it should be the last resort that farmers use in terms of managing these economic insect pests. Because if farmers continue to solely depend on insecticide application, there's a potential that whatever insecticide that we have available in our shelves will soon lose the effectiveness, and then farmers will be left without a very effective control measure. So remember that IPM alone, it suggests that we need to use these control measures in combination to complement each other, meaning that there's no a single control measure which we can say that it is effective enough to suppress a particular insect pest. Therefore, they suggest that instead of really having to rely on one control measure, we bring them together, complement each other, and then suppress, because we also understand that it is impossible to completely eradicate pest population in the environment. So, but then if you are not able to eradicate, with maintaining the pest population to the level which is acceptable. And of course, this brings us to that point whereby we say that farmers need to at least adopt to action threshold, which is difficult for them to do it themselves. And then that's where, of course, we see that research comes in. Then we start to say that farmers need to apply insecticides following or being guided by a certain decision-making process.
Yeah, when we're referring to IPM, speaking of integrated pest management, we've definitely tackled that in previous episodes as well for our listeners. Anyone listening curious to know a little bit more about crop protection, the different methods that can be applied. But going more into the use of insecticides, and as you said, being careful not to say that it's not effective, but that farmers should, you know, when using it, be well informed and, you know, the decision-making process, be informed by scientists like yourself or agricultural advisors as well. I mean, your research, you know, speaking about farmers, as soon as they see pests, they're wanting to use insecticide to get rid of the pest. When they see male moths in the pheromone traps, can you explain why it might not be the best approach to immediately go in with insecticides before understanding the pest population?
It is very important, Patricia, to make our farmers aware or understand that their setting of Dutasulfa male moths in their crop environment does not necessarily translate to economic damage if they don't spray insecticides at that time. So by that, it means that we must acknowledge, as IPM suggests, the presence of insect individuals, of course, in their crop environment, because it is close to impossible to completely eradicate its presence in the crop environment. In contrast to the question, farmers actually should ask themselves the question that if we don't spray insecticides at the setting of the moth, at which stage should we actually start to spray insecticides? And of course, that will lead us to that by we saying that they need to be guided by the decision-making process that includes reaction threshold.
I did go through the resource that you provided. It suggests that farmers may benefit economically by applying insecticides when moth catches exceed 50 per trap. This is the physical traps that your farmers use in controlling pests, and also, I guess, understanding the pest population. Can you maybe speak a little bit more about that and why you suggested that, you know, 50 moths as a threshold before considering insecticide?
During our experiments, of course, which we conducted in tomato tenders through different localities in Gauteng province, we found that there's actually no difference in terms of crop damage when farmers spray insecticides weekly and at 50 type of catches. So farmer A, who sprays insecticides at weekly, and farmer B, who will spray insecticides when type catches reaches 50, actually at the end of the day, they are impacted similarly. So the only difference to those farmers, of course, will be the operational cost. But that has got nothing to do in terms of farmers losing their crops to infestations or anything. So if farmer A and farmer B, at the end of the day, the crop damage is the same, one will ask, therefore, which is the best method? What is the best time to spray insecticides? If you can imagine now having to apply insecticides on a weekly basis for about 21 weeks, and having to apply insecticides when you reach when you reach 50 type of catches, which of course many times is being later when the crop reaches the transformation stage, which one is going to be the best, and taking into account the health as well, taking into account the natural resources that are available in the environment. Remember now, when you are applying conventional insecticides, that poses a threat to human health as well as the beneficial insects that are out there. So now we're going to have to decide that which one is best, if at the end of the day, farmer A, who applies weekly, and farmer B, who applies at 50 type of catches, is the best, taking into account that both of them, at the end of the day, their crop damage is similar. Of course, the one that applies insecticides at 50 type of catches will apply lesser number of insecticides compared to that one who's applying insecticides at the weekly intervals. With many times, if you actually put it to numbers, it's going to be about 6 to 7 applications until the farmer reaches the main maturity and then harvesting period is over. I like the one who's going to be having to apply for 21 weeks for the growing season.
I want to maybe direct the conversation a bit more to the biological control methods. And I found it quite interesting, you know, that there is a natural predator for this pest, the Nessie bug. Can you please explain a little bit more about it?
And I mentioned India that invaded South Africa in 2016. Later in the years, during what is it, around 2020, 2021, during COVID, researchers from the ARC embarked on a journey to find natural resources for this economic insect pest. In that journey, they found Nesidocastinus, which of course commonly stores in Nesiba, to be present in most of the tomato producing areas. But then they were finding this natural enemy or this natural resource. The challenge that was there was that farmers are killing this natural resource with conventional insecticides they are applying. Most of the areas, of course, it will include Gauteng and Limpopo, as well as other parts of Mpumalanga.
You know, it's quite important that we also provide some sort of practical way to apply the information that we're sharing. So with everything that you've shared now, what advice do you have in finding the balance in controlling the specific pest of Tuta absolutum?
While IPM is a very complex strategy, a complex control, it is important that national farmers that before they can start to think about applying insecticides, they also need to understand that there are other control methods available that can be applied. Meaning now that before they resort to insecticide application, they can still try to employ control methods such as the one that you just mentioned, the cultural method, as well as the biological control method. Biological control method, well, of course, we understand now that this particular biological control agent, which we just mentioned now, Nesidocastinus, that it is available in many parts, in other parts of the country. Farmers should also try to introduce these control methods before they can start to think of applying insecticides. In this way, they are intentionally delaying the insecticide application, because their delay of insecticide application also allows us some time to come up with the strategies that are most suitable for their or crop production activities. Like, for example, now, if farmers delay or adopt the action threshold, which we just spoke about now, this will, of course, allow us some time to come up with suitable integrated management strategy for their respective environments, as opposed to just applying insecticide sparingly. So them using this control method before or embarking on insecticide application will actually assist us researchers as well in terms of having to come up with a strategy that will best suit their crop production or crop production activities. So in the advice that I can give to them is that there is actually a lot of control methods at their disposal. For example, now when they have joint moth sighting, when they see the presence of moths in their crop environment, instead of deciding to apply insecticide, they can just squash that moth which they've seen in there. Or maybe in terms of maybe infestations on the plant, whereby you find that there's a larvae on the tomato plant, I mean, if they've got traps installed in their farms and they can see that as they're counting the what catches in those traps, they are below 50, what they can do is just to prune the nests which are infested and then bury them or maybe ban them. In that way, they are delaying the application of insecticides. We are not saying that they must not apply insecticides. Yes, insecticides should be applied, but then they should be applied at the right moment. Because if they can just apply insecticide indiscriminately, so in that way, very soon we're going to have a challenge whereby the available insecticides are no longer effective because they've developed insecticide resistance. While we do understand at the same time now that many times it is not the case that insecticides have developed resistance, it's because of how farmers are applying insecticides. So that alone tells you that we are dealing with a lot of things at the same time. Hence, we are now saying that farmers, before they start applying the insecticides, they first need to look at the pest population level in their environment and see if they cannot employ of any other control method that is at their disposal before they can move back on the general for applying insecticides, of course, in the 50 triple cages.
I was fortunate enough to visit some of the producers earlier this year in Messina, and they did speak about the problem, the struggle that they have with this pest. So this information is quite valuable. And for the farmers listening now, how can they access, or you mentioned speaking to researchers and understanding the pest populations on their farm? You know, sometimes it differs from farm to farm. How can they access a researcher like yourself? What advice do you have for them to seek channels of information?
So farmers can contact or go to their nearest agricultural department. But then again, they can also contact the ARC, which is the Agricultural Research Council, who, of course, we understand that they're working closely with our extension officers and crop advisors throughout the country.
I'm curious also to know, what are you looking forward to in the developments on the research that you're currently conducting? Maybe let us know, what can we look forward to, and in what areas do you think more research can be done regarding this? Yes.
I've been looking to the potential of Nesivac to suppress tongue tied. One question opens up a question to another. In terms of viruses, I'm at the point now of looking into taking viruses to the field, to the design world, and see how it performs. So I'm looking into expanding viruses and taking this Nesivac, taking it to the field and see how it performs in terms of suppressing tongue. But then, of course, that to so happen, we need support, of course, from government as well as critical stakeholders to support this usage, because now we are speaking about the yearly, the mass yearling of this particular agent. We should at least start to have enough numbers to introduce into those experiments. And as I mentioned before, that for as much as that this particular biological control agent, it is there available in many parts of the country. But then the numbers in those areas, in those regions, are not enough. We need to have enough numbers to be able to say that, yes, this particular biological control agent, it is working. And then part of my research actually looked into the numbers that we might need in terms of suppressing to the absolute reduction to an acceptable level. And then, of course, for as much as it is still ongoing research, but then we do understand that it has indeed a potential. We just need to take it out there and then see which number exactly do we need to plant to suppress or to effectively suppress to the absolute infestations. So all the future holds in terms of research, there's a lot of research that needs to be done, particularly on this insect pest, it's absolute, because there's not enough information for our farmers out there, mainly because there's not much research done. Yes, researchers are trying to close the gap, but then yes, there are still limitations then there, but then yeah, we hope to be successful in terms of having this enough information for our farmers in the near future.
I'm actually looking forward to the results that come out of the research that you will continue to do on the Nessie bug. As you mentioned, in the literature you provided, farmers shared their experience in another publication about the Nessie bug reducing the population. So it does sound promising.
We sometimes also need to have those farmers who are out there who can say, yes, that's what at my instance in the farm. And I'm a living testimony of what is happening. So at the moment, yes, there's that particular farmer who actually came forward to say that, you know what, that actually it is effective in terms of managing winter. I only had infestation for this particular period. From there, there was nothing. And then going forward, there was abundant population of this particular Bengal control agent in my crop environment. And not only that, that particular biological control agent extended its effectiveness to other economic insect pests of tomatoes. That we will speak about the white flies, the mice, which are troublesome for farmers as well. We just need to have language that we can speak with farmers to say that, yes, it is working. And then, yes, farmers maybe should consider actually looking for this biological control agent in their environment.
Thank you so much to Blessing Mpahlele, PhD candidate in entomology at the University of Pretoria. For more information on this topic, you can visit www.foodforumzanzi.co.za. And that brings us to the end of this episode. Remember to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform. From me, Patricia Tembo, our technical producer, Megan van der Vint, and the rest of hashtag team Food Forum Zanzi, thank you for listening.